I am an obstetrician at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Baby catcher, I like to call it, since most of the time all we have to do is relax and observe. But because of my position, I have a lot of interest and excitement about the development of new human beings. And we're going to call this course Embryology, God Creates a New Human Being. And I hope that through the course of the 5 days, those of you who can keep coming back will let me know if I'm going too fast, too slow, at what level it should be. We're going to start out relatively elementary, but I think that you're, for the most part, will be staying at like first year of college kind of level, so that I'm going to presume some knowledge of anatomy, etc. But we'll try to go with the basics. Now, the title of tonight's talk is 1 plus 1 equals 3 billion plus, and I don't think that too many people are having any trouble figuring out what that means. One cell plus one cell, one sperm plus one ova makes 3 billion plus cells in the birth of a child. And as we go through the 5 days, tonight we're going to talk about the formation of the germ cells, the sperm and the ova, and essentially how they get together and what happens. Then tomorrow we'll be talking about how this fertilized ovum makes it down the trek through the fallopian tubes into the uterus and set up housekeeping inside the uterus. Then we'll be talking really about that first couple weeks, the implantation and the beginning of development. Then the third night, we'll be talking about a really big time in the life of the embryo. It'll still be an embryo at that stage, as we talk about from the third week of development through the eighth. And during that time, the baby makes every organ system it's going to have. It's amazing. So by the time 8 weeks has passed, a mere 2 months since the time of fertilization, the baby is a complete human being. Not functional outside the uterus, of course, but completely formed. Then the next night we'll be talking about the fetal period. That's the time after formation of all the organ systems when we have a maturation of those processes and the baby grows, tremendous growth, and gets ready for life outside the uterus. And then our last night, we'll be talking about the birth of a baby, a little bit about labor and delivery, but many of you here by first-hand experience know more than I do probably about that. And it's been in the popular literature enough that we won't spend the whole night on labor and delivery. We'll talk, though, a little more about the changes that happen in the baby at the time of delivery, which I don't think people know very much about, and they are exciting, matter of fact, downright awe-inspiring when you think of the changes this baby has to make to change from an intrauterine environment to breathing air and being out here with the rest of us. Well, so we'll start out here slowly. Every night I'm going to have a little short list here of words that I'm going to talk about that you may be associated with, you may not be. It's not going to be a long definition session, but just so when you hear them come up again and I say their definitions again, it'll be the second time and it won't go by too fast. The first two here are mitosis and meiosis, okay? In both cases, cells are dividing and making more cells. There is a big difference, though. In mitosis, when you have a cell divide, it makes two cells that are identical. They're exactly the same as the parent cell. The cell that started the division makes two cells that are identical to itself. That's mitosis, okay? Meiosis is a process that's unique to what we'll talk about tonight. And that's when a parent cell divides into two cells, but each of the cells has one half of the amount of chromosomes, one half the number of genes in them as the parent cell. Essentially divides in half. Okay. Differentiation. That's a word we're going to talk about a lot. I'd like you to try to get it. It is a word that means becoming more sophisticated. any cell line that goes from being able to do anything to being able to digest food, let's say, or be able to secrete insulin, let's say, some specialized function has differentiated into a more sophisticated cell. There is a wide number of differentiations, but we'll be mentioning that a lot. Okay. The next one, spermatogenesis and oogenesis. All of you are Bible readers. You know what Genesis is, the beginning, the creation. And this is the creation of a sperm, creation of an ovum. And that's spermatogenesis and oogenesis. Talk about that a lot tonight. Gamete is a general term meaning germ cell, either for sperm or ova, either one are gametes, okay? So we'll be mentioning that a little bit. Like I said, we're going through quickly, but we'll get back to them during the talk. Zygote. Zygote is what you have when two gametes meet, okay? When sperm and egg meet, that conglomeration of cells that develops is known as the zygote, okay? Before it is taken on a form that really is embryonic, that we call an embryo, it's called a zygote, when it's still just a number of cells, okay? Endometrium, okay? Endo is inside. Metrium refers to the uterus. So endometrium refers to the lining of the uterus. There are two varieties that are normal in women of reproductive age. Proliferative, which means growing, right? Proliferating. Proliferative endometrium. And secretory, which means putting out all kinds of glandular secretions and other goodies for the baby to grow on. So the endometrium is the lining of the uterus. There are two kinds we'll talk about. Hormones, I'll go through this quickly. We'll go through it in much more detail in a few minutes. FSH and LH are abbreviations because remembering the long names are sometimes a hassle. It stands for follicle stimulating hormone. That'll become more clear to you as we go out through this evening. LH is the so-called luteinizing hormone. Both of these are from the pituitary gland in the head. Okay? So just remember FSH and LH, the ones that are abbreviated just with letters, are from the pituitary gland. Okay? Now, estrogen and progesterone are the two primary female hormones. Estrogen is a product of the follicle. Remember that. The follicle is the nest for the egg inside the ovary, if you will. And it produces estrogen. After the egg is out of the nest, we no longer have exactly a nest. You have what's called a corpus luteum, a yellow body that remains in the ovary where the egg came out. And it produces lots and lots of progesterone. Okay. Well, enough with boring old definitions. Let's get to see actually what is happening. Well, first of all, like everything at Holden, I think we need a text for this, and it's not very hard to find one. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through Him all things came to be. Not one thing had its being but through Him. All that came to be had life in Him, and that life was the light of men. A light that shines in the dark, a light that darkness could not overcome. So through this course, we're going to go from this little four-week embryo. We won't make it this far tonight. This is 4 weeks from fertilization to this, which is 5 minutes after birth. And it's a very exciting time, a miracle, an inspiration when you know it about what God can do and does in His creative acts as day-to-day goes on. Millions of births every week in the world, millions of creations, millions of miracles of God. As that little tiny one becomes that little tiny one and pounds on tables and chairs and other things like that. Okay. Well, we're going to start out here now with gametogenesis, the making of germ cells, and the germ cells are made through meiosis. Okay. Let's start out with the male. We get to talk about men for a brief period of time here at the beginning. In the testis, there are, it's a conglomeration of tubules, really. And these tubules are lined with cells which are precursors to sperm, okay? Now, the very beginning, the primordial, most primitive cell along that line, it's called a spermatogonium, okay? That's that little guy on the second level here. I got a pointer, I guess I'll use it. And that's this one. Now notice that in all males, all normal males, the chromosomes are 46XY, okay? X chromosome and a Y chromosome makes you male. All you need is one, and if you have one, you're male, okay? So 46XY is what all spermatogonia should have. Now this cell is present, but kind of quiescent in the testis until the time of puberty. At the time of puberty, you have all kinds of proliferation of these cells going on. Literally millions in a given day, billions in a given month, lots of spermatogonia. And each one of those differentiates under the influence of hormones to a primary spermatocyte, okay? Remembering all these are not that important, but a primary spermatocyte still has 46XY chromosomes. But it is getting ready to make the big trick. The big trick is the reduction division of meiosis, okay? Once a cell is differentiated into a primary spermatocyte, it's ready that its next division, it's going to split into two halves, one with 23 X chromosomes and one with 23 and a Y chromosome, okay? Now that big step there is very important. It happens continually in the male and makes lots of precursors to sperm. These then divide by a very, like a mitotic type division. In other words, it makes more cells just like itself. And then you end up with four, two of them 23X, two of them 23Y, and then these cells differentiate into sperm themselves. Okay? Now, the important thing to remember is we started out with 46XY chromosomes. That's what it takes to be a normal human being. When we get done, we have 23X or 23Y spermatozoa. Okay? Now, again, you mentioned the way those tubules were lined up. This is the way they look. In an adult, you see this is a cross-section of the tubule, and the tubule is lined with literally millions of cells. Now, at the base of this are those spermatogonia. And then as the cells progress along the line from primary spermatocyte, secondary spermatocyte, spermatid, and spermatozoa, they work their way into the center. And by the time they're spermatozoa, they're released into the middle of the tube and can swim downstream. Okay? Magnified, here we have the spermatogonium, then they get primary spermatocytes, secondary spermatocytes, spermatids, and then the spermatozoa. As you can see, they're free on the free edge of the tube and can escape then out into the tube. The production is tremendous, as I've mentioned many times. Let's first talk about the sperm. Okay. The sperm itself, spermatozoa means semen animal, okay? And they're remarkably like animals in terms of that they have their own method for propelling themselves. They're free swimming, actively motile, and but they cannot, of course, reproduce on their own, so they don't make it as animals, okay? Now, two basic parts, a head and a tail, okay? In the head, we have a membrane around the outside, and just inside that membrane is the acrosome. The acrosome is a little bag of enzymes, okay? All talked about enzymes that are in washing detergents these days, but these are a little bag of enzymes that's carried right there in the tip of the sperm. Right behind that is the nucleus of the sperm, and that's carrying all those chromosomes, the genes, the things that will make that carry all the messages that are going to come to the father, from the father to this baby. then we don't really need to get into the fine structure of the tailpiece, but let it be said that the tailpiece is very important for propelling the sperm upstream after it's deposited in the vagina. There are numbers, because of the millions that are formed, there's a lot of them that are abnormal. As a matter of fact, we would consider 30 to 40% abnormal forms, meaning two heads, headless, other strange arrangements, as being within the normal range. So that we may feel proud about our production, men, but actually we have to make up for all the failures along the line with the numbers. And a normal count is a lot. 80 to 120 million sperm per cubic centimeter of semen is a normal count. That's a lot of cells. And here's a fairly good batch of healthy sperm that are labeled with a dye that makes them fluoresce. And you can see them actively swimming. They're all heading the same direction. They all know which way is upstream. Okay. Now, let's turn our attention to women. There's a big difference here now, in some ways, and very similar in others. Once again, the trick has to be, you've got to get a cell that has one half the number of chromosomes, okay? The big difference is that this process all starts a long, long time ago. We have here it's not even pictured, a spermatogonium. There is a cell, the oogonium, which corresponds to this first beginning cell that was in the sperm side. But there's no woman in here who has a spermatogonium. That's because they are all formed prior to birth. You have every egg that you're ever going to have when you're born. So that there is no more production after the time of birth. All the spermatogonia have already changed to primary spermatocytes. Okay? In contrast to men that are making numbers and numbers of spermatogonia that are changing into spermatocytes and splitting up, women are born with all the eggs they're ever going to have, and they're already changed to primary spermatocytes. Now, the other thing that's strange, oocytes. I got to get that right here yet. So the primary oocyte still has 46, of course, XX chromosomes, 2X chromosomes in the female. And it starts the first steps of meiosis before you're born. And then the whole process is arrested at birth. And despite the fact that the chromosomes have already started to line up and things are getting ready inside the cell to split up, it just stays there for 10 to 12 years until puberty. And then the process is very dependent on the events that occur in the menstrual cycle. Let's just whip on through it and then we'll get into the menstrual cycle a little more in detail. Okay, that little middle part is the oocyte, okay? All this fringe around the outside is that nest of cells that I talked about in the ovary. The nest that the egg is sitting in, that is the follicle, okay? Now, as the follicle develops, it gets thicker and it starts to secrete fluid inside it, okay? And there's a little crevice here that eventually fills into a great big cyst, and within the cyst is still sitting the oocyte and the surrounding cells around it. So that this is the follicle. The whole thing is the follicle. The oocyte is just this little thing in the middle. How little? Well, it's just barely visible by the naked eye at the time of ovulation. So it's, as cells go, it's big. Okay. Now, the process of meiosis has been arrested. And we'll get into in a minute how it happens. But at the time of ovulation, this process wakes up and starts continuing. And at the moment that the oocyte is extruded from the follicle, from the ovary, and released into the abdominal cavity, at that moment, the first meiotic division occurs. Okay? The first meiosis. Okay. That's the big reduction division. So when the egg escapes from this follicle, at this point, it has thrown away half of its chromosomes. Why don't you get two eggs? That's what happened on the sperm side. Well, I don't know. God decided that wasn't the way it was supposed to be. It throws away half of its chromosomes, and a tiny bit of its the cytoplasm, the stuff around the outside of the nucleus, and puts it in the side here, and called that the polar body. Excuse me, this one's the first polar body, which occurs right at the time of ovulation. And the first polar body is just debris. Nothing occurs of it. It just goes away. Okay? Now, if that egg, the meiosis is not completed now, unless that egg is fertilized. If fertilization takes place and the sperm get into the egg, then a second polar body is formed. Now that seems totally redundant, seems unnecessary. You've already got it down to 23 X chromosomes, but in the male, you'll remember, those split into two before they differentiate into the real thing. Well, it apparently is part of the important process because this will split into two after duplicating its chromosomes, leaving you with an egg that has 23 X chromosomes and two polar bodies each that have 23 X chromosomes. Okay? But the process doesn't happen until ovulation for the first division, and the second division doesn't occur unless fertilization occurs. Okay. Now you're wondering, if you were born with all the eggs you're ever going to have, how many is that? Oh, 30 to 40,000. Okay? Quite a few. But unfortunately, only about, well, probably unfortunately, only about 400 will ever be ovulated. So there's still safety in numbers to some extent in the female side of things too. Okay. This is just a cross-section of an ovary, again, giving you an idea of what this nest looks like. As the ova, the oocyte, is developing, that follicle, the nest around it, changes and gets more fluid around it, and the oocyte is just sitting down here in the bottom, covered with a little layer of cells, but this cis fluid gets more and more and more and more until it's about a half an inch in diameter. So you could easily see this if you were looking at an ovary just prior to ovulation. And many of you may have had a cyst on an ultrasound or something like that that went away shortly. Well, all that is a developing follicle. Okay. Now, another look at the same process. This time the ovaries are cut in half, and you can see that these follicles grow and grow until they come up to the edge. And then that little narrow area there bursts and the ovum, the oocyte escapes. Okay. And we'll get to it in a few minutes, but then what's left is this little yellow body, which is what is called the corpus luteum, the yellow body, and that produces progesterone. And it's the site in the ovary where the egg came from. Okay? So, the big differences between male and female. In the male, at the time of birth, you have a given number of spermatogonia. At the time of puberty, there's a continuous production, multiplications, and lots of spermatozoa. Okay? That one doesn't want to stay in focus for some reason. In the female, the difference is there we have birth, right here, and all the eggs are formed as oogonia and then oocytes, primary oocytes, until puberty, and then very slowly you start to decay the number that are there as ovulation takes place, and after about 400 of them are gone, we have the menopause and there are no more follicles in the ovary. Okay. We're going to talk now about what's happening in the uterus during this time. And so first we got to review the anatomy a little bit. Okay. This is a surgically removed specimen where the uterus, the external surface of the uterus can be seen, the ovary, the fallopian tubes, with the fingered ends of the fallopian tubes lying there very close to the ovaries. Okay? Now, if you take that and cut it in half, in a sagittal section, this is the vagina attached to the lower portion of the uterus, the cervix, right here. Then there's the cervical canal into the endometrial cavity, the lining of which is the endometrium we talked about before. This is connected to the tubes, the fallopian tubes, and that is very close to the ovary. Once again, there's the corpus luteum. Okay? Now, the endometrium is that lining tissue inside the uterus. And the purpose of this slide is just to show you that this whitish area on the bottom is the basal layer, and that's the only part that's permanent. Everything above that grows and sheds every month as we have reproductive cycles. So any successful cycle is pretty complex. It starts out with that primary follicle and ends up in fertilization of a mature ova, as well as producing a normal environment conducive to implantation of the fertilized ovum inside the uterus. Now, this is a kind of a complex slide, fairly important, and we'll try to go through slowly enough that everybody can enjoy it. Okay, if you put an arrow through my head, straight through here, in the very center, you would run into the hypothalamus. That's the lowest part of the brain in terms of anatomy. It lies just above the pituitary gland. And the hypothalamus really runs the show in regards to reproduction. Okay? It does it via the pituitary gland. The hypothalamus cannot directly communicate to the rest of the body, but it does have a special little link to tell the pituitary what to do, and the pituitary does have the capability of communicating to the rest of the body. So you can kind of think of the pituitary as the first mate or the gopher of the hypothalamus. Okay? Now, under the influence of that FSH hormone, follicle stimulating hormone, and now you know what a follicle is, right? It starts to stimulate a growth of a single follicle inside the ovary. Why one? Very poorly understood. But only one per month develops under normal circumstances. And we start out from that primary follicle, within which is a primary oocyte. And this is at the time when menstruation has just occurred, and the lining of the uterus is thin down to the basal layer. Okay. Now the pituitary gland says, let's get this, or I should say the hypothalamus says, let's get this show going, tells the pituitary gland, put out follicle stimulating hormone until I tell you to stop. Okay? And it puts out FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, and causes growth of this primary follicle into progressively more mature follicles until you have this cyst-like structure, the mature follicle. In the meantime, the cells that are lining this follicle see the follicle-stimulating hormone, and one of the byproducts of all their growth is lots of estrogen. Estrogen is formed as a byproduct of the growth of the follicle, and the uterus then didn't care much about the FSH, but seeing estrogen coming from the follicle says, that's my cue to grow a lining. Okay? So the uterus starts to thicken its lining, grow, 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 grow. This is the proliferative phase of the endometrium. It's growing more and more cells. Its primary responsibility is growth at this stage, under the influence of estrogen. Now, the hypothalamus, in its wisdom, determines when there's just the right balance of estrogen around and starts to put out very large levels of the hormone LH, luteinizing hormone. And that hormone stimulates ovulation. It causes that egg to escape from the follicle. It causes that egg to escape from the follicle. It does that probably via pressure from the fluid inside the follicle and some enzymes that are right at the top part of the follicle, so that the wall kind of softens a little bit. And the combination of that softening and the pressure inside causes kind of an explosive extrusion of this fluid from the ovary. And as a result, the egg rips off of its attachment at the bottom and flies out with the fluid into the abdominal cavity. Okay, that is under the stimulation of LH, luteinizing hormone. Well, lutein, heard that before, the corpus luteum. And the luteinizing hormone causes this follicle, what's left of it, to form into the corpus luteum. Okay. Now, the cells in the follicle changed a lot. They turned yellow and they turned into this body, the corpus luteum. They also change in what they produce. And they make lots of progesterone and still some estrogen, but lots of progesterone. And as a result, the growth of the lining of the uterus is stopped to a large degree. And it starts to mature, differentiate. It starts to become more specialized. And these glands become capable of secreting lots and lots of mucus and other nutrient products that will be great. It's not just reproduction. Okay. One more picture of what that lining of the uterus looks like. Right after menstruation, this is the basal layer, just a very thin proliferative layer. Then with all the proliferation that occurs with the estrogen hormone, you get a nice thick layer. And then finally, with the progesterone production, the endometrium responds by making glands that have, see that debris in it, that is the secretory products. Okay? Now, at ovulation, that secondary oocyte is released from the ovary. At that moment, the meiotic division occurs, and the polar body is formed. Okay. The oocyte is extruded from the follicle with an accompanying follicle hangover. Okay. This little gelatinous layer in white is called the zona pellucida, and it's gelatin-like, and it surrounds the oocyte. The other thing that came along with it from the follicle is this group of cells that are regular follicular cells stuck to the outside of the ovum. Because of the way it's splayed out and raised like that, it's called the corona radiata, the radiating crown, okay? And that is a cellular layer that's still surrounding the main oocyte. Okay. Now, that fallopian tube has to pick up this ovum from wherever it came from, okay? If it came out of the back side of the ovary, the front side of the ovary, it could come out any surface of the ovary that it wants to, and the fingered end of the fallopian tube, by motion, by mechanical motion, reaches out and picks up the free-floating oocyte from the abdominal cavity. Then little hair cells on the inside of this fallopian tube make sure that it stays there and starts beating it downstream toward the uterus. That process takes about 25 minutes for the fallopian tubes to pick up the oocyte. If it doesn't occur in 25 minutes, it probably is not going to make it. Meanwhile, if the timing was right and people wanted to be pregnant and other things like that, 200 to 500 million sperm have been deposited at the cervix in the vagina. With the good old swimming and the help of muscular contractions of the uterus and the tubes and beating of the little tiny hair cells within the uterus, the sperm arrive at the ampulla, almost the very end of the fallopian tube, just inside that fingered area, in about 15 to 45 minutes. Okay? Some have been reported to get there in 5, but I don't think they're all IndyCar drivers. It's interesting. We need lots of numbers because out of all those millions of sperm that are deposited there, only 200 or 300 make it to the site of fertilization. So there's a lot that don't make it. It must be a terrible trip. Okay. Usually within 12 hours of the escape of the secondary oocyte, for ovulation, fertilization occurs. Most of the time, it has to happen within the 12 hours. There certainly is some variation in that, but generally speaking, pretty reliably, it has to occur within 12 hours. Before the sperm can penetrate this armor that the oocyte has, the corona radiata and the zona pellucida, it has to be given what's called capacitation, given the capacity to penetrate the oocyte. And this capacitation occurs, again, we've got to thank the women, because it appears to be fluid from the uterus and from the fallopian tube that gives the sperm the capability to penetrate the oocyte. What happens is probably a portion of the outside protein coat of the sperm is digested off. Okay. Then, as the sperm is approaching, what happens with this capacitation is the acrosome, remember that little bag of enzymes at the tip of the sperm, gets into contact with the head end of the sperm, and little tiny holes develop in the wall and allow those enzymes to be available to anything the sperm bumps against. And that is going to be the corona radiata and the zona pellucida. And those enzymes have the capability of digesting their way inside the ovum. And that's what happens. When the sperm has reached the actual cell wall of the oocyte itself, it's managed to get all the way through the corona radiata, all the way through the zona pellucida, its cell wall, the wall of the nuclear material itself, fuses with the wall of the oocyte and allows the nucleus of the sperm to enter into the oocyte. At that moment, the oocyte puts up its defense shield and no other spermatozoa can make it in, which is a good thing, because if you have more than one sperm getting inside the oocyte, the pregnancy is doomed from the start. It's called polyspermy. It probably does happen sometimes, but it doesn't become a pregnancy. Okay. At the moment that the penetration occurs, that second meiotic division occurs, and we're on our way. Okay. Here's a few sperm trying to get in. One of them makes it, and at that moment, the oocyte puts out the second polar body, that second little garbage capsule of excess chromosomes, okay? So now we have two polar bodies sitting here on the side and the sperm within the oocyte itself. Now, the tail just sort of dissolves, but the head, you could get a swelled head about being the one that makes it, okay? So it gets as big as the nucleus of the oocyte. And then the nuclear wall of the one from the sperm and the one from the oocyte dissolve. And this nuclear wall dissolves and the chromosomes have a chance to admix, mix up. And once again, you have 46, either XX or XY, depending on what variety X or Y the sperm that made it is carrying. Now you have a fertilized ovum. We didn't have a mature ovum until here. It started its trek to being a mature ovum before you were ever born. Fifth week of a woman's development, she started this, and now it's finally over. And with fertilization, we have the admixture of the chromosomes, and immediately, or essentially immediately, these chromosomes line up and begin to divide and perform mitosis again. We're done with meiosis now. mitosis, making more cells that are just like the ones before them. Okay? And so from here we have rapid proliferation, rapid divisions, and first we have a two cells with two polar bodies, and four cells, and eight cells, and on and on. We'll be talking from the morula on tomorrow night. The morula is called the morula because it looks like a mulberry, and morula is mulberry in Greek or something like that. At any rate, so that with, at the moment of the admixture of those chromosomes, division of the cells begins. And a new life is potentially there, at least potentially. Sex is determined, male or female. The development has started strongly by the multiplication of cells. And the number of chromosomes has been returned to 46, as we got 23 from the sperm and 23 from the oocyte. Now, where did this happen? We'll come back to the rest of this slide tomorrow night. But once again, remember that the sperm made it all the way from here, upstream, through the tube, and fertilization should happen right there in the ampulla of the fallopian tube. The oocyte had a less distant trek, but I dare say it was maybe a little bit more tricky because it got released just into the open air here and had to hope that the fingers of the fallopian tube would get a hold of it and direct it to the ampulla of the fallopian tube where fertilization takes place. So thus, with a beautifully simple in a way, but biochemically extremely complicated act, God creates a new beginning. Tomorrow night we will go on with the adventure. I guess we can talk a little bit more if you're interested about what things can go wrong up to this point. But first, let me just open it up to questions.
What about twins?
What about twins? Okay. You can have, there's two varieties of twins, either fraternal twins or identical twins. Fraternal twins occur when, for one reason or another, two oocytes are released from the ovary at the same time. And when both oocytes are fertilized, of course they'd be by different sperm, you get two different individuals. They have a different collection of genes from mom and a different collection of genes from dad if they come from two separate sperm and two separate ova, and so they look different and they can be one's a boy and one's a girl. So that's fraternal twinning. Now, identical twinning is a little more complicated because it can happen in a couple of places. We'll move back a slide here. Either you can have, when this two-cell layer develops, if they decide to go on their own way, okay, if you will, and each cell gets a population of its own, instead of being just a mass of cells, you end up with two masses of cells because each one somehow segregated at the time of the first division. And that gives you identical twins. Now that can happen anywhere up to this morula stage, at which point, even then, you can have, at the time of, which we'll talk about tomorrow night, when the zona pellucida bursts inside the uterus and the egg becomes capable of implanting in the uterus, even at that late date, you can still have a division between the cell populations and form monozygotic, or I should say, identical twins. It's interesting, you can get a different variety of twins, either different findings at the time of birth in regard to their amniotic membranes. If they divide early, they're going to have separate placentas, separate amniotic fluid bags, etc. If they divide late, they may only have a single amniotic membrane and a single placenta, which is actually bad for the babies because they have more chance of getting tangled up and other problems. Twins in general are a headache, though. Yes.
This is one of my twins.
Yes. a headache? Could they come from either side? No, they probably don't. They go up each side equally in most occasions. And so some of them are just wasting their time. But people have been known to ovulate out of both ovaries the same month. It's a rare occurrence, but it has happened. We know this because people have had ectopic pregnancies, one in each tube at the same time, which is really bad luck. But that's about the only documented case where we know that one ovum came from each ovary. But so it's possible, but very rare. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be talking about that a bit tomorrow as we talk about implantation. But the most common cause is infection. With the increased rates of infection that we have in the female pelvis these days, we see a lot higher rates of ectopic pregnancy. But it could happen from a previous ruptured appendix or whatever. At any rate, bacteria getting involved with one's fallopian tubes is a bad thing, because the scarring that results can either cause permanent sterility because of occlusion of the tubes, or it may cause any number of changes that could lead to an ectopic pregnancy. Either a narrowing in the tube so it gets caught on the way down, or another possibility is the tubes have to be mobile, and they, by the action of their musculature, tend to force the egg downstream. And if the tube is damaged by infection so that it does not have full capability of motion, that can probably lead to ectopic pregnancy. The timing is the critical thing. All you have to do is slow down the egg enough so that it gets to this stage by the time before it gets to the uterus, and it will burst that zona pellucida and implant wherever it is. So if it's too early, it's going to be in the tube probably. If it's too late, it could be down at the cervix or never get implanted at all. Yes? That's a good question. Why does the change in altitude affect the menstrual cycle? It's difficult to know on a case like that whether it's the change in altitude, the change in living conditions, change in activities or whatever. But certainly it may be a factor. And the entire menstrual cycle is remarkably sensitive to changes in one's environment, emotional state, etc. And one of the most common things that I see are women that go to college and their first 6 months of college they don't have any periods. And that's almost never anything to worry about. And it's related probably to the fact that that base portion of the brain, the hypothalamus that runs the whole show, for some very arbitrary sort of reason seems to shut down. If you lose weight, you start running 5 miles a week or something like that, change your living conditions, any number of things, it will just quit putting out the stimulation and the orders to the pituitary gland. So I can't tell you for sure what it is about moving to high altitudes, but I can tell you it's the hypothalamus that's doing it. It's the base of the brain that, for lots of reasons, will just turn itself off, but it's thankfully temporary, unless you do a real bad weight loss thing. Yeah.
But that
it's a little bit different. If you are very heavily involved in athletics, such that you decrease your weight, and this is the case of women, to the point where you actually have less than 5% of your body as body fat, it appears to be critical. That may be the cue actually to puberty in women, with the growth of body fat to that level. And if you decrease below that level from whatever your athletic endeavor, either running or ballet dancers, is where we gymnasts, that can be a real problem, because you can almost have to sometimes tell those patients that either they don't want children, in which case they don't have to worry about it, they do want children, they're going to have to decrease their activity somewhat and eat a little bit more in order to get body fat up just a little bit above 5%. Don't want to gain a whole bunch of weight, but so that's a little bit different. It's probably related to estrogen hormone. You need a lot of estrogen, comes not from the ovary, but from body fat stores, conversion peripherally. And so that's a little bit more than just the hypothalamus. Other questions? Okay. Yes and no. Okay. At the very onset of the stimulation of the follicle, the very beginning, numerous follicles get started. Okay. But only one makes it to a mature follicle. Probably maybe 10 or 15 will make it to the first steps of development. But once you've made it to the, that's a bad thing. That's how come we only have 400 that ever ovulate. Because if you start the follicular development, but you don't get to be the follicle that makes it to ovulation, that's it. That was your chance. And those follicles will then become atretic, and we'll start out with a new batch the next month. You're right, more than one follicle starts out on the road, but almost always only one makes it. Okay? Other questions? Well, very good. Thank you so much for your interest, and be glad to see you tomorrow night.